All right, make sure you're in fellowship as we enter into chapter 42 here of Genesis. That opens, if you will, with an air of incredulity. Captured at the end of the verse 5 there, with the fact that there was a famine in the land of Canaan, that there was a dire situation and test, that is, for living grace in regards to the inhabitants, including Jacob and his family. Moses personifies this using Joseph's brothers in contrast to their older father, Jacob, who was 129 years old at this point in time. Hard to get around, loss of sight. Being the one of the family, obviously still the head and authority in that respect, but being the one that has to take the initiative and spur his sons to application in order to resolve with the proper application the test that's set in front of them. This is what underlines Jacob's opening remarks to his sons there in verse 1 when he says to them, "Why are you staring at one another?" It's like staring at a wall, like spaced out, dull, listless, at a loss is the idea in that regard. So we're dealing with this contrast that we see. Obviously, all this post recording of Joseph and his spiritual highlights previously and God's deliverance and blessing for him in this respect, to see the reality now in regards to his family back in Canaan, and then as it is the reality of the STA and its impact upon all people, including the adjusted positive believers in time, and as we'll see here, even with respect to Joseph himself. So Jacob recognizes the test. So point 10 there, page 4 of our notes, pick up there. It has been made evident to him by some means that food was readily available in Egypt. 11, this may be by travelers having already visited Egypt, along with reports otherwise. So 12, it has become apparent to him that decisive action is of necessity to address his family's own needs in the situation. 13, the rhetorical idiom. The question is rhetorical. It's a slam. It's a chide. It's a rebuke. Why are you staring at one another? Reflects the air of indecisiveness and bewilderment that his sons are displaying considering their state of need. What do we do now? What do we do now? So, his question, humorous to the enlightened, but sad commentary in regards to any real spiritual adjustments that might have otherwise one would expect over 20 years, being at least living with a father who was in maturity in spite of his own weaknesses, and to see just how lukewarm these believers truly remained, giving them the benefit of the doubt to that degree. So The question, why are you staring one another, reflects the air of indecisiveness on their part, bewilderment, if you will, that his sons are displaying considering their state of need. They're sitting on their duffs, not doing anything. So 14, it hints at these believers showing no real spiritual advance in their own lives over the past approximately 21 years. 15, they are viewed as dull and listless in the face of the test before them. They're seen as dull and listless in the face of the test before them. And again, understand that it's not because of the lack of availability of doctrine in their life. Obviously, if we've seen their reaction to sound teaching that came from Joseph, their youngest brother, and we saw just how antagonistic they are, and there's no reason to think that any of his brothers were unbelievers. They're believers. But their attitude in regard to doctrine is less than, as we would say, positive in regards to their phase two. And one would think, at least with the association of a father and an authority who was mature, hence the name Israel, providing doctrine, having available a doctrine around there, that maybe they would overcome some of their STA modes of life through some spiritual advance. But we don't see that with them. What we see is these more virile, younger sons of Jacob not doing anything, not taking care of even the living grace needs that has beset the family in need through this famine. And it is the mature father who has to crank him up, if you will, into action for application. So 16, their dullness facing this, quote, elephant, end quote, test, which obviously is a major living grace test. As Jacob makes it clear, if we don't get food soon, we're going to starve to death. So their dullness facing this elephant test is indicative of a consistently failing test in general. That's just part of the reality in life as a believer, that if you don't deal with the smaller tests in life, that which we might call mosquito tests, common human problems that we all face, etc., and don't overrule our sin nature, seek to apply doctrine in these smaller tests, when the big tests do come around, don't expect yourself to be the great spiritual example in handling those types of tests. Those who are basically just muddling along in regards to their Christian life, when those big tests do come around, generally that is what exposes them for the lackluster spiritual person that they really are, in spite of, again, maybe even being in Bible class consistently. The brothers were around their father consistently. Again, NPR is the first ground of evidence in regards to polyvolition, but it's not the situation. Now that you're here, and yes, the truth is being provided to you in regards to teaching, and you got to hear it, you also got to go out and apply it. Without the application, then you're no more than a walking Wikipedia of information that really has no force other than, you know, liking to sound good in regards to the doctrinal language of life. Doctrine is designed to be our life. It is a Christian way of life. So we see here, at least strongly suggested, if not explicitly. Believers who had not done much with doctrine over their same period of time in life than their brother, who they sold off, kidnapped and sold off in slavery, has had ample the same amount of time in regards to his own life and where they're all at. Where they're all at now. So 17, this opening is presented intentionally by Moses to contrast the spiritual state of affairs between Joseph and his brothers. 18, he suffered in testing and grew. They plod along in life just to get by. And that's really about the best you can say for them, at least in light of the comment of their father towards them in this situation. Sitting around their death shows, staring at one another, etc., shows those who are not accustomed to initiative of application. See, that's how you come about to seeing and perceiving their overall life in general. So, with Joseph, contrast to his brothers, we see two starkly different states of being in regards to their spiritual momentum and level in life. 19, as the narrative will reveal, Joseph S.C.A. is alive and active. Joseph S.C.A. is alive and active. As he seeks to take revenge on his brothers, retaliates, giving a little taste of their own medicine, so to speak. So, you put these things together, what's the picture that is formed in regards to the spiritual analysis of the situation? And that is 20, he, Joseph, is evidence that the STA is not the root cause for spiritual failure in completing the believer's phase 2. Great believers sin in life. Great believers have an STA just like everybody else does. We have ample recordings and examples of the Bible of great believers who have done some fairly horrendous things under their STA. So to blame your STA, even though we recognize the weakness of the flesh otherwise, but to blame your STA is the root cause for your own spiritual malfeasance or decline in regards to your spiritual growth. It's just an excuse. It's not the root cause. Our STA is not the root cause. It seeks to trip you up. It wants to mess you up, and it will manifest itself in all different ways. But the real cause for spiritual failure in life comes through one's own negative volition in regards to the doctrine, and hence not willing to apply doctrine in light of, in the face of, STA interference otherwise. So that's 21. The root cause is and will always be negative volition of Bible doctrine in inhale or exhale faith or both. I've said it once, I'll say it again. Leaving Bible class, leaving your NPR is never the solution to your problem. Your STA will convince you otherwise, but it is not the solution to your problem. To abandon Bible doctrine will do nothing more than sustain and maintain your spiritual problems in life. The remedy, the prescription, begins in regard to being in Bible class and then taking it out with you in the world and applying it in regards to your life. to stay in positive to doctrine at that level of hearing the doctrine and then applying it is that which gives you victory in regards to your SCA in time, i.e. applying the rebound and maturity adjustments to the justice of God. That's where Christians in the world today are just completely and almost totally blind to this fact of what makes a great Christian. What makes a great believer. Again, with Jacob, we've seen the sad commentaries in regard to his SCA activities already. And we'll hear it again, just as we read in the verse in first class, in first hour, in regards to the commiseration that he experienced in life because of his SCA, etc. But yet, God named him Israel. God named him Israel. Why? Because he was willing to strive with God, no matter what kicked him and took him down in regards to his SCA or not. See, he stuck in there with it. And that is the evidence of one who is a seeker of God, who will not cave in and not capitulate in regards to their pursuit of doctrine in regards to their life. So, this is no excuse for SCA activity otherwise. That is not what is being spoken here. But it does clear the air in regards to the priorities, spiritual priorities, that one must have in life in order to render the SCA sufficiently defenseless enough for one to be victorious in regards to their phase two. So Joseph, in all the examples that he has been on the good end, if you will, of enduring undeserved suffering, of God blessing him and greasing his skids in spite of all this, and how he was able to draw off this encouragement, etc., to sustain himself, maintain himself spiritually, and keep his head above water in regards to all the severe testing he underwent, and then the great blessing. Of all the examples that he is at, in that regards, he further is a premier example in regards to the fallacy of notion that somehow one's sin alive is that which is the root cause in regards to their spiritual life. Now, the root cause is their unwillingness to continue to embrace doctrine in their life and to seek to maintain their NPR and the rebound and maturity adjustments under that umbrella. The people, they create their little sacred cows in life. And that's what they choose to worship. And the next thing you know, doctrine has taken back seat in regards to their life. And that's when you have spiritual catastrophe. David and his sin and murder and adultery. He obviously underwent severe divine discipline in regards to it, but one thing he never did was give up his rope and holding on to the truth of Bible doctrine in regards to his life. And hence, we see him, and I love this stuff because for the negative person out there who likes to take issue with the Bible and Christianity, well, you know, who wants someone who murders somebody to be the leader of my country or whatever, et cetera, et cetera. These people are so blind in regards to the grace of God and what it really is that God is looking for in regards to relationships with Him in that vein. That it just shows how arrogant and stubborn negative volition really is. How self-righteous negative volition is in their own right. Even though on the other end of the coin, they're just as guilty when regards to their own sins. So take it for what it's worth. Yeah, yes, I understand. Well, yeah, they got another SCA. They did this. They split from doctrine, peel from doctrine, blah, 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 blah. But understand, that's because their will has separated itself from the seeking of God's plan in their life to begin with. Their will, your will, starts to weaken. That's why you've got to understand the priorities and establish these priorities as your regimen in life in regards to NPR and making the adjustments otherwise. If you want to be victorious. Now, by this time, Judah has also returned to the ranks of the household. Obviously, that 10 brothers are sent out, minus Benjamin. And then obviously Joseph is not part of it. That's the 12. It tells you that Judah is back after his affair. And time off in his pursuits in life. So 23, while he still may show a rank of spiritual quality above his brothers, and obviously you have different levels, even among those who are slightly maladjusted or otherwise, he still is grouped together with them in Jacob's remarks. The father of the kings of Israel, Judah. And his father is talking to him too. As it is with lukewarm believers, and this is probably how I would best categorize his brothers at the best, is lukewarm. As it is with lukewarm believers, often an authority has to chide them to make applications otherwise obvious to the spiritually astute. We've got a famine. We're going to all die if we don't go get some food. There's food in Egypt. What are you all doing standing around? Let's go do something. Make application here. And it is with lukewarm believers. Often it takes someone else that's more spiritually astute, that is not wrapped up in regards to their STAs and otherwise, to point out the reality and charge them up, if you will, rebuke them, reprove them, exhort them to make the application otherwise. Things that people who are focused on doctrine, who let doctrine truly rule their thinking, and they had their priorities straight in life, it's amazing how different they may see things than other believers who are otherwise let in sacred cows, lukewarmness, a less than desirable aptitude in regards to doctrine and their NPR, how they see things. Anyway, to be discerning. So 25, here the authority being the father of Jacob. And now this is a chide to do. It's a rebuke. This rhetorical question. So he addresses it in point 25. Behold, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Hina, Shema, Ki, Yesh, Shever, Bet, Egypt. Verse 2. 26, the exclamatory, behold, Hina, in the Hebrew, is designed to say in no uncertain terms that it is time for his sons to, quote, get off their butts and make application, end quote. With sitting on your death, apply doctrine. And obviously, living grace for authority of the house, which the sons would be authorities over their own families, is one of the primary applications of doctrine to go out and work and try to make a living and support the family that one would expect. So the behold is a verbal command, if you will, in essence, exclamatory of disgust that they haven't done any more than they've done in light of the need of application. And it's time for them to make application. So 27, the verb heard, shema, on this occasion shows a need for one to, quote, listen, end quote, in life, necessary for discernment and application. People love to talk. To find people in life who are willing to give other people a real ear and be real listeners, that's not quite so common. Everybody wants to have their opinion told and made known to everybody, but to listen to others, etc. So here the language that Moses chooses to use with respect to Jacob's talking to them in the context of reproving them, he's heard. Why haven't they heard? I'm an old man. Dadnabbit, can't hardly get out of the house. Can't see. I've heard. I've saw. What are y'all doing sitting around? You should know there's grain in Egypt. Can we put this in a movie? Make a movie out of this? That'd be fun. So, the fact that he, in the rebuke, tells them that he's heard is a lesson of the necessity to be a good listener for doctrine. As James says, one needs to be quick to hear and slow to speak and slow to anger. Quick to hear, that means that you're in fellowship, you're willing to give the doctrine a hearing. To think about these things, pray about these things, consider these things before you jump off on any immediate conclusions in contrary otherwise, to at least give opportunity in regards to the doctrine and what's being communicated. And when it does bust your little sacred cows on occasion, as it does all of us, or address your areas of STA or something that you don't like, that you're not quick to get off on your anger and antagonism and rebel, see. Or, letting your thoughts go where maybe even righteous indignation may get involved on occasion. But anger doesn't really accomplish anything, whether it's righteous or unrighteous. It's just a response, see. So the necessity to listen. First you've got to hear. First you've got to know what the issues are. And then you have discernment in regards to, now what do I do? Or think, say, or do. 28, the application needed immediately here follows. Quote, go down there and buy some for us from that place. Yarad, Sham, Wa, Shavar, Lamed, Min, Sham. So 29 there, to descend from the higher elevation of Canaan to the more sea level region, depicting Egypt here, as I brought out in our parsing. Jacob then states the doctrine of the blatantly obvious. For the why of his command, so that we may live and not die. The doctrine of the blatantly obvious. Wa ka'a wa lo muth. There are some of those doctrines out there that are the doctrine of the blatantly obvious. Blatantly obvious to those who are astute and discerning spiritually. See. But to those who are dull and listless and blind and lukewarm in regards to the realities, they're not so obvious. What one thinks is most important. Again, the contrast of insight and visual comprehension of the reality around you. Doctrine, human viewpoint, these things have a direct effect in regard to your perception. So there are certain doctrines that are doctrines that are blatantly obvious. Obviously, you've got to be in Bible class and learn Bible doctrine before you know what the issues are and fulfill God's plan for your life. The doctrine that is blatantly obvious. See. Here, the doctrine of blatantly obvious is, if you don't go get us some food, we're going to die. And we prefer life. At least a normal person does. So 31, it was readily recognizable that this famine was a life and death situation. It wasn't just some temporary season for less than a productive crop for the year and to be able to continue to live off the land. No, it was a life and death situation. Grain, obviously, would be the more common food base or foundation for both family and animals alike. You got to figure they had their industries, their cattle, their sheep, their goats, camels, whatever. Free-range chickens, pecking at the dirt here, no range. You know, they had all these things to consider. So 32, here it is the right application to put out effort to travel and procure grain so as to not meet certain death. For them, it was the directed will to go and find food. Obviously, if you can't meet living grace needs, which is a primary need of life in and of itself, what good is the Bible class going to be for you? And there may be times. I mean, if somebody has such a severe living grace test that they have to, the only job they can get takes them out of Bible class here and there or whatever, maybe they have to for a while. Even though this you're kind of hard-pressed to see that anymore. There's more job. I see more signs for help wanted within the last 6 months than I've seen in 10 years around here. But anyway. For them, it meant packing up, going to Egypt, and finding out how to get a hold of some of this grain so their family can live. 33, the physical here mirrors the spiritual realities for those that remain maladjusted to the imperatives of doctrine. And 34, It is a combination of both hearing and doing that equates to spiritual orientation. Obviously, we're dealing with believers' phase two, the necessity of both hearing the doctrine and applying it in order for spiritual advance to become a reality. Luke 8, 21. For people want to make family their God. And would think that Jesus would never rate his family less than the highest of priorities in his life are people who haven't read the Scriptures, at least in his totality. Jesus in his ministry, teaching doctrine, that's his number one priority. In verse 19, his mothers and brothers came to him, and they were unable to get to him because of the crowd. The number of people were there. Jesus, mostly because of his miracles, packed the house on occasion. And here was the situation. And his immediate family, Jesus had half-brothers and sisters. Obviously, they had the same mother, but they did not have the same father. And one would think, well, obviously that's his mom. So he needs to stop everything that he's doing and take care of what his family needs are in this respect. But that's not what you see. And this isn't the only occasion it's recorded in this fashion. Verse 20, and it's reported to him, your mothers and your brothers are standing outside wishing to see you. Verse 21, but in contrary to that, but he answered and said to them, my mother and my brothers are those who hear the word of God and do it. You have a spiritual family, you have a physical family. A spiritual family, today in the church age, we refer to as the royal family. That's because all believers are royalty, whether they act like it or not. We are all part of the makeup of the bride of Christ as a church, church universal. So, there's other occasions where his mother came to visit him, and he said the same thing. Don't you want to talk to your mother? Now, my ministry takes priority. My spiritual life takes priority, see, over these things. And he wasn't being mean to his mother. But he obviously did not compromise doctrine on behalf of his family either. His brothers and sisters at this point in time, by all indication, weren't even believers. His half-brothers. And they became Jude and James. They became believers. But, you know, that's the nature of volition. You never know how it will operate and function and how positive or negative volition will manifest itself. His mom, at the wedding ceremony, he turned the water into wine, she was trying to egg him on and urge him on to proclaim himself as king. We've been through that in John, remembering way back when.